condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tim Mayo. Carter on the board. SP futures down 22. NASDAQ futures down 95 after we were up yesterday. Do we have Supreme Court Justice Carl with us?
Oh boy, have I had fun with this the last couple of days. I'll tell you.
This is so much for a lifetime appointment, so you're not political, eh?
Well, okay, so it's about let's put it this way: it's 40 years late, but it's about effing time that we actually had a Supreme Court, and I don't know why they did it now, because I mean, you know, Robert's been on the court forever, right? I mean, well, not forever, but
Thomas has been.
So Thomas was a statute for an awfully long time too, in a chair, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, famously he was thought of as a guy that never asked questions. Boy, not no more. And the other thing that was fascinating was the January 6th case. I listened to the oral argument, and from the point of time that Jackson was appointed, the vapid garbage that came out of that woman's mouth during oral arguments was truly unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, on the January 6th case, she actually asked intelligent questions. I was shocked that I'm like, wait a minute, this woman actually sounds like maybe somebody transplanted a brain into her head. So I was a little stunned that, you know, there is a kind of like, I guess to some degree it's like the presidency. They do say that in a lot of cases, historians of the court say that people that get appointed to the court over time, they actually grow into the job.
Which I think that's probably true in a lot of cases. Some maybe not.
Well, and some maybe not. When Jackson was originally appointed, I was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. The first couple cases I heard. I listened to the orals, and I'm like, you can't be serious. She actually, that came out of her mouth. This is a Supreme Court justice. But like I said, the Jan 6 case, I was like, okay, that's actually an intelligent question, and it bears on the point, okay? But what we had was a series of decisions, and the last ones, which, by the way, didn't just send the lunatics on the left side of the aisle into some kind of psychotic break. It set off the president into a psychotic break with his little 5-minute thing last night that he took no questions, but he had to get out there and make a statement about it.
Yeah, I missed that. So
I wish I'd missed it. He obviously didn't write that. Somebody, you know, one of his script writers wrote it. But it tells you who we have doing those kinds of, you know, doing that kind of PR stuff in the White House right now. And it's truly frightening because, and in fact, Sotomayor, the dissent that was written and issued with that January 6th case, was histrionic garbage. Okay, she literally put forward deposit that the decision allowed the president to drone his political opponent.
I'm not so sure it doesn't.
Yes, it does. No, it does not. It does not. It's very clear. The division it draws is quite clear. If you are going to claim that this decision is wrong, then Barack Obama should have been hanged on the National Mall for droning, for by accident, civilians when he was in office. And he did. He droned two American civilians. Okay, now he wasn't trying to drone American civilians. He was trying to drone a terrorist who we had every reason to kill because the guy had killed a whole bunch of Americans. And, by the way, that was an act of war. And he's the commander-in-chief, and that's one of his jobs.
Collateral damage.
Well, it's one of his jobs, okay, is to be the commander-in-chief. I mean, that's the president's job. And by the way, there were people that tried to go after him for that when it managed to, you know, he killed that. Now, where he could have been prosecuted, and what this decision says, is that the president has the presumption of immunity if he is acting within his official duties. Within his official duties. He does not have absolute immunity. He has the presumption. It can be voided, but in order to void it, you must show that the action was taken.
Which is totally impossible.
Well, no, it's not. But you have to show that the action was taken in a corrupt fashion. Or he stepped outside the lines.
My concern about the Supreme Court and really the last many years has been a total disregard or lack of knowledge of the state the legal system is in when they lob these things out there.
Well, okay.
They have no idea. There's no way now that if you get a buffoon like Trump that's in there, Carl, it's not, you and I aren't disagreeing on this stuff. My concern over really the last, it came to my attention when Cheney was in office.
Oh yeah,
and it harkens back to when I was very young and I started to work my way through the Siebel political thing. I mean, work my way through. I ended up corralling one of my buddies who was a pretty serious attorney, but he did a lot of tax work. But the guy's a real bright guy, and I said, okay, what is the deal with people in office getting money and enriching themselves, basically?
Right.
And he said, oh, this has got to be, well, I'm thinking 80s, maybe early 90s. And he said, these jobs, it's really tough on these guys because we knew these guys on the South Side, Marty Russo and people, they all came out of the CON, the Constitutional Convention for the state, and they became right. Really the whole next generation of political people in Chicago. I mean, Mayor Daley was one of them. I think Madigan might have been one of them. Anyway, he says, Marty Russo is the representative. He got in there early. Was a good guy. He said, the dude, if he goes to play golf at Beverly, somebody's paying his way in. Everybody who became, a lawyer at a decent firm, in his class, wherever the hell he went to law school, he's doing way better than he is. The guy's making, I think it was 30 grand a year, somewhere. Now I should look up the numbers. Somewhere between 25 and 40 grand a year as a rep. He has two houses. The guy doesn't have a dime because he's straight. And there was always, and he goes, when you get in there, you have to put anything you have in a blind trust and blah, blah, blah. Now, what I didn't realize at the time, this must have been some sort of a convention or some sort of a house rule or a gentleman's agreement or something. It was clearly no law, because as soon as somebody got in and said, the hell with it, I'm not doing it, he just went on and said, the hell with it, I'm not doing it. And I think there's a lot of that that's going around out there. And this is just another act to me where, I mean, what Trump proved to me in office, and I'm not saying he did a horrendous job all the way through at all. I mean, what I'm saying is he just buffaloed his way through stuff, and it turns out there either is no real rule or there is no real enforcement. The thing that it has gotten me...
You're right on that.
And the Supreme Court can come out with this crap. Look at the stuff, and I'll take a shot at Biden. Look at the stuff with the student loan stuff.
Oh, well, that was one of the...
But so, I'm saying what that should have happened is Congress should have woke up and said, hey, zounds, that's our job. We should work with the president, and we should fix this ridiculous student loan stuff where people, even if they're disabled and somebody, you sign for a guy's loan who's dead, you can't get out from under this in a bankruptcy. This is insanity. Yet, you think they've done that? No. Yet here we have this morass of crap going on with this student loan stuff. Nobody paid attention to the guys, but the Congress didn't even get the message that this is their job either. Now they come out with this thing.
Now wait a minute. Congress has the right to say, "Well, we're not changing that. It's fine the way it is."
But it isn't. They know that.
Okay, I'm not arguing that it's fine the way it is, Chief. But Congress, look, we have a tripartite system of government for a reason. Okay, and if Congress says we're not touching this because we like
it, they didn't say that. They just
yes, they did. No, silence they is an action.
Not today. It isn't. These guys are incompetent. If they wanted to, they should have a vote.
Chief, why did 97% of them get reelected?
One of the most amazing polls I've ever heard of, Carl, and you know what I'm talking about. Most amazing polls I've ever heard of is that people countrywide.
They hate Congress, but they love their Congress.
That's exactly right. That's the most incredibly, collectively stupid thing I've ever heard.
And you know what, Chief? And you know what? Even among, these are the people you hang around with. Maybe you ought not slam them. You won't have any friends left. Well, guess what? It's true here. It's true when I lived in Florida. It was true when I lived in Chicago. It was true when I was running a company. It was true when I was a wage slave in Chicago and everywhere else that I've ever been. Okay, and this stuff is not new, but the reality of it is this: the Supreme Court, like any other court, okay, their job is not to put brains in 330 million American voters. And it can't be, because they can't do that. It's not possible.
These are the guys that refuse to get rid of the Major League Baseball.
Far be it from me to say that I like a lot of the stuff that, you know, or I think that any of it is much of what they do is defensible. All I'm saying is that the decisions that have come out of this particular session have been consistent. Not only with the way the Constitution's written and the separation of powers, they've been consistent within themselves across the opinions, which, by the way, the Supreme Court often doesn't do and makes you pull your hair out trying to figure out what the blankety-blank the rules are. These have been consistent. And one of the first ones that was out yesterday was on statute of limitations. And that also made the left go nuts, okay? And it held that an APA claim does not run the statute of limitations until the injury occurs to the person who wants to sue. All right? Now, what the left said is, oh, my God, that means that you could sue under something that's, this 15 years old. Well, yes, it does. And you know why that actually is the right decision? Because there is another law out there called the Anti-Injunction Act. A lot of people have never heard of it. And what the Anti-Injunction Act says is that you do not have standing until you get screwed. So if you watch Congress pass something, say some tax, and you believe that something, whatever it is, that got passed is unconstitutional, you can't sue until you actually pay, until you get screwed. You have to pay the tax first. Then you can sue. But if you try to sue before you are personally injured, it'll get thrown out for lack of standing. So what the Supremes said is this game that agencies play and what Congress does, where they pass a law, and then they very cleverly don't prosecute anybody for 10 years. They literally ignore it on purpose until the 6-year statute of limitations runs on this particular class of claims, things under the Administrative Procedures Act. Then they hose you. The statute of limitations didn't run. because you haven't been injured yet. And oh, by the way, the whole reason that is logical and makes sense is because the Anti-Injunction Act says you can't sue them until you get screwed. So basically, what these guys have been doing for the last several decades, and Chief, your industry has been hit by this multiple times, okay, is they pass some regulation, FINRA does something, whatever does something, and then they deliberately let Goldman and Morgan Stanley and these other guys go do whatever the blankety blank they want, and then after the 6 years is up and nobody can sue, now they start hammering people over the head with it. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. The injury, when the injury occurs, that's when the statute of limitations starts to run.
Well, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, neither do I, but you know what? The left is running around saying that this means that you can sue over things that are 20 years old. Yes, it does, if, in fact, the harm to you didn't start until sometime within that period.
The thing that concerns me about all this, it's not about Kevin's, of course, messaging in about how fair the student loan system is, or something along those lines. actually, he didn't say that. But he's talking about that this is fully intended. I don't think right now the student loan system at all is what is fully intended by Congress. They just will not pick it up, and all they're going to do is fight over it.
Excuse me, Chief. The student loan system, federalizing it, was done under President Obama by Congress.
I understand,
and that's
all that.
What led to where we are
I'm
today.
I'm not as big a dummy as you and Kevin are accusing me of. What I'm saying is,
I'm not saying you're stupid, Chief. I'm saying Congress.
Nobody anticipated these people paying 7% when the government was making everybody else pay 2%. Nobody anticipated.
So mortgage loans don't change and credit card loan rates don't change over time with economic conditions everywhere else in the economy.
I'm saying that the way the student loan system was set up, okay, and it was the bankruptcy stuff was a knee-jerk reaction to what? Was it four Jewish doctors that pulled the scam?
That's right, that they strategically defaulted.
Yeah, okay, yep. Now we also have other people. Do they realize, I don't know the whole part about the co-signing, but there's people that are friggin' dead, that they're still going after them.
You know, by the way, if you want to know why college costs are five times what they ought to be, that's the reason.
Well, sure it is.
Okay, and same thing. Gee, isn't that interesting how the same thing happened in healthcare?
Well, sure it does. And the same thing is happening right now in front of your very eyes in veterinary care.
Why can't I buy a truck that has old fashioned halogen headlights? The same reason.
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is there needs to be some. What you're talking about, and what Kevin is, by the way, I'm not giving you guys crap. You know,
you're
talking about the page, and I guess when I argue with people, sometimes I'm very bad at knowing where I'm coming from. From where I sit, Carl, the arbitration system, the legal system, is absolutely you can't get in it from a normal person. Nobody can pay the attorney rates if anybody wants for you to do anything.
Right.
You might if you have an injury, if it's egregious enough and you're laying there as a quadriplegic, you might get one of these sleazy law firms to take it on contingency because the numbers are going to be huge and they're going to get a third of it. You might do that, but just a regular lawsuit, nobody has any access to courts that I can see. So when you guys have four fat ladies dancing on the head of a pin, like, okay, if the president does this and it's really not his official capacity, who the hell is going to take that law? What normal citizen that gets harmed is going to be able to wander, walk that fat person and jump in the end of that? Who's going to walk that through the legal system, the Supreme Court, who is getting harmed by some president? It's not going to happen. These guys' view of the legal system is totally different than mine.
Well, absolutely, but I tell you, sometimes every now and then, somebody manages to actually take a law and shove it up somebody's behind.
Yeah, once a decade.
With some lawyer
who's working for nothing and somehow has a hair up his ass and does it.
Well, you know what? The interesting thing about the tobacco situation was that it was exactly that. Nobody would touch the case because they'd get blackballed by the Bar Association, okay, if they went after the tobacco industry, until you had one scrapping attorney who had his nice, shiny new JD and had been admitted in one state, and he said, you know what? I smell money. And he went after those guys, and boy, oh boy, did he break the floodgates open. And incidentally, we just had just decided in the last couple of days down here in Tennessee a very amusing case. So when Biden decided to attempt the OSHA jab mandate, the Tennessee legislature got extremely upset about this and passed a law and got the governor to sign it, surprise, surprise, that said, you can't do that. You put all mandates in you want. However, if somebody objects, regardless of the reason, doesn't have to be religious, they just have to, nope, we're not doing it. Not only can you not enforce it, but you cannot take any retaliatory job action towards somebody as a result of this. And there were a couple of carve-outs. One of them was for gee, Vanderbilt doesn't bribe the right people.
Yeah.
Because anything that CMS demanded, they got, right? So there was a carve-out in there for CMS. Thank you, Vanderbilt. You screwed all your nurses and doctors and all your medical students that were on, you know, that were on residency. However, who didn't get exempted was Tyson. You know, Mr. Chicken?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Tyson has a bunch of plants here, and they fired something like 70 people who refused to take the shots. One of them sued under this law, and it got through the jury system, and they just got $700,000. Guess what? Here we go, because now the blood's in the water. That plaintiff just dumped a bunch of chum into the Tennessee state waters, and you can bet the sharks are circling and are going to start taking bites out of people, and I am going to laugh my butt off at this, because it is, and all those people who say that Florida is the land of the you know, the place where these mandates were stopped and da 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 da, that's such a load of crap. They're DeSantis got a law passed that said that he could fine companies $5,000 per person per day for attempting this. The Straws, which is a entertainment venue in Tampa, had a mandate. He conveniently didn't bother going after them. He did try to go after the cruise line terminals.
Well, these laws are that you're making my point.
Well, they got an injunction and they stopped it, and then he never followed it up. He never pursued it. He never appealed.
Well, do you think that
the whole thing was for show down there? Okay, the whole thing.
Do you think that the SEC basically got shoved right up their butt on these administrative law things by the Supreme Court? Correct.
Well,
sort of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
now do you think that if it's PTI Securities, which, by the way, don't have any problems, but if we did, do you think that the administrative law losers at the SEC are all fired today, or they're still there? I think they're all
still
there.
Of course they're still there. By the way, the old joke that goes back all the way to when I started my internet company is that the first and primary job of anybody at the government regulatory agencies on their computers, and the reason that they ignore subpoenas, is that they're all sitting around watching porn all day.
Well, I get it, but I'm saying now, what difference does this make to me in the sense that if they were to come after me or a friend of mine or somebody in the industry, and they force you to either have an administrative thing or force you into arbitration or something along those lines, now, what am I supposed to do? Go find Clarence Darrow's grave, kick it, hope he comes up and doesn't charge me to, what's it, $1 million for me to run this thing to the Supreme Court and say I shouldn't be in this kangaroo court? What's my number?
Oh, it's huge.
So what have they done for me tomorrow?
Well, nothing.
Without any sort of enforcement of any of this stuff.
Oh, no. Well, this is... But see, this is... You know, Biden goes on last night and makes this thing about how, you know, now the presidency... And by the way, Pelosi said the same thing. The presidency is an emperor. And, you know,
Which Trump is pretty much wants to be. I mean, a lot of these guys seem to want to be.
Well, that's his argument, okay? And my immediate response while listening to this 5-minute screed of his, which was as unhinged as I've ever seen a president, was, excuse me, the Supreme Court told you cannot take billions of dollars of taxpayer money. In fact, enough money that the CBO put $400 billion on the deficit projection and give it to people who took out student loans. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. Congress never passed a law authorizing you to do it. And by the way, Congress has to pass a law that authorizes all spending.
But we are...
Chief, you know, and he went out and he did it anyway. Again, after this was passed, after the Supreme Court decided this, and in fact, he just announced another, and he keeps getting swatted at. But the thing is this: he's standing here telling me that that Trump wants to be an emperor, and maybe he does, while he's acting as an emperor.
Okay, the student loan thing, in my mind, is so screwed up. The people, they're probably out of 100% of the loans, you can forgive probably 30-40% of them if you did it intelligently. It doesn't make a difference to the bottom line of the rest of the people, because you're not going to get a dime. These people are gone. They're dead. They should have bankrupted. This thing is so out of control with some of these people and how much they own. You're not going to get anything, Carl. What's the point? I mean, what's the point? What are you going to do to these people? Put them in debtor's prison?
Well, here's the thing. If you cut off the game, which
I'm with you on that. I'm absolutely with you on that.
Obama was not the start of it, but he was the end of it, and he made it 100 times worse. Okay, as you noted, the original thing started because a handful of Jewish doctors decided immediately after getting out of medical school that they were going to game the system. They strategically defaulted. They didn't have anything yet because they were brand new doctors, and they basically stuck the colleges and the underwriters, and then Congress started passing laws that ratcheted up the protection of this debt and made it as immortal as child support.
Carl, I know. Well, let's talk about our former president and his dancing through the bankruptcy courts on several occasions. But if you want to talk about, I haven't done this, but here's a good one for you. We don't have any time. But one of my buddies is a mortgage loan where they buy distressed mortgages and they try and.
Yeah.
Guess what people do with the bankruptcy court in New York? I'll leave you with this one, and we'll talk Friday. They just booted some people out of this house after 12 years. Now, you might ask yourself, they have not paid a mortgage payment in 12 years. Now, you might ask yourself, self, how the hell does that happen?
How do you get away with that, right?
They put six people on the deed, on the loan.
Oh, my God.
And sequentially, they declared bankruptcy. And every time somebody declares bankruptcy, you get 2 years
it
in the
stays,
bank.
It stays
for,
it until
for 2 years,
over.
And then as soon as the bankruptcy court says, you got to pay, the next guy declares. So out of all the abuses that are in bankruptcy court, I think somebody who's in a wheelchair that signed a loan for their nephew who's dead maybe deserves to be in there. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, I am not arguing that you know, that we have a perfect system, we have a good system, whatever. There's obviously a whole bunch of things that are horrid, but what I am saying is that we've now got the end of this term has taken the separation of powers that is supposed to be there and said, you guys have been playing fast and loose with these rules, and by the way, you've been screwing Americans with this the last 40 years in a lot of cases. The Chevron thing is the
I
big
agree.
One
oh,
there.
I agree.
By the way, you will stop it, and we're going to be consistent.
Well, that's my point. They're not going to stop it, and where have they been for 40 years?
Well, obviously letting people get screwed, right?
Yeah. It's a long time.
Yeah. It is a long time, but you know what? When somebody does something that actually takes a step in the right direction, I can sit back and say, you guys are being consistent
I'm with
for
you.
Once.
I'm with you. I just, at the end of the day, by the way, I happen to agree with just about every one of these decisions. I'm just trying to get knowledge out of your head, which is easy to do because there's a lot in there. But the point is, the whole mess that is whatever's supposed to be in Washington, in the common sense, that is supposed to be somewhere around people we elect is so far gone. These aren't going to make any difference.
I think
a president who's going to be an ass is going to hide behind this, and he's going to do a bunch of crap stuff. And nobody's going to be able to come after him because you're never going to be able to say whether it was official or not. Who gets to make that call?
You can impeach him if the people are pissed enough.
Oh, okay. But what I'm saying is the things are so out of control that it's not going to make a difference at the end of the day. I mean, I know it's a pretty nasty view of the world, but I'm not so sure this is going to make any difference to any normal person that I know of in front of an administrative law. Streets and Sand Department here isn't firing their people today.
I know. I infamously told the city of Chicago that I was going to take the line card out of my router if they didn't pay me on time because they would boot my car if I didn't pay my parking ticket.
Yeah, well.
And when they laughed at me, I did it. They got, all of a sudden they found the check. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, we got a dash here, bud. SP Futures down 25. NASDAQ Futures down 121. You're right. Hopefully Joel's on the line. Wait for a second. We'll be right. Real quick break because we got to get to Joel.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Right now. Hello, Northwest Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. Real quick, because we're running a little late, SP Futures down 25, NASDAQ Futures down 121. We have as usual, when I argue with my guys, Ricardo, I never seem to make the right points. Kevin just texted in that the Supreme Court has to wait for somebody to bring a case. And there's no way I can argue with Kevin on that because he's 100% right. My point is the ability of a regular citizen to fight anything that's in the current courts that is wrong is like zero. I'm not going to get there with a case to the Supreme Court. Neither are you, and neither is Kevin. That's the whole point. I mean, the legal system is inaccessible to the normal citizen right now in a lot of ways, in my opinion. All right, real quick here, Europe, DAX down 232. That's 1.3%. Ouch. FTSE down 41.5. CAC around down 80. That's over 1%. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei actually up 443, 1%. Hang Seng up 50. 0.3%, still under 18,000. Look at this, Shanghai up $2, still can't make it to 3,029.97. All right, we've got bonds down two basis points, the Bund unchanged. We've got oil up 75 cents, 84.13. I'm going to say this is starting to look like a breakout, unfortunately. Brent up 72 cents, 87.32. Gold down $5, 23.30. Silver unchanged, 29.62. And we've got the U.S. dollar 107 against the euro and 126.6. So it continues to strengthen a little bit. What do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports, real quick?
How are you doing, Chief? It's currently 6:37 a.m. here in Chicago. 65 degrees right now with a high of 83. A couple of showers today, brief ones, but you might want to bring an umbrella or two. Over in Phoenix, we got 92 degrees right now with a high of 112. That's sunny and hot and dangerous here, so you want to look out for that. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 15 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 33 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 19 minutes. And Stevenson from 294. To the Dan Ryan is 21 minutes. On to sports in the MLB, we got a couple of games today. White Sox play the Guardians at 5:40 p.m. Cubs play the Phillies at 7:05 p.m. and Diamondbacks play the Dodgers at 9:10 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
We have Joel.
Sure do, Chief.
Hey, bud, how are you?
Good, 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 good. Are you getting picked on a little bit, Chief?
No, we have a lot of people from the right, which is fine, and they like these decisions from the Supreme Court. First of all, I don't like any Supreme Court where I can tell you how people are going to vote. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with that because they're supposed to be independent and they've got a lifetime deal. So everything shouldn't be 6-3 when I know who the six are. Mm-hmm. I mean, uh, I just I think the legal system is totally gone past the normal American. Now, Kevin says this was a small fishing company that brought some. So somebody somewhere makes it all the time. But you and I, we're still liable to get stuck in administrative court next week. What are we going to walk in and say, Judge, you shouldn't be here? Supreme Court just said this. I'm walking out. Good luck with that.
Well, right? a lot of things to say there,
yeah,
Chief.
Yeah.
First, you'll find a lawyer to take your case. Well, you know what that will get you. You know, is dependent on that lawyer that you choose and how much money you're willing to pay him. So, the lawyers seem to be making money on most of these things that are going on, and there's nothing. I'm not saying anything bad about that. I come from a family of lawyers. But what you're talking about with the Supreme Court, I mean, what you're talking about in overall politics, is kind of above my pay grade here at this juncture here, heading into the November election. I just kind of want to see a peaceful election is the only thing that I'm asking
for. I don't know if we're going to get that. We'll see. And the epicenter of this whole mess is my city that's so screwed up. I can't even talk about it. I mean, now these guys are going to have they got an expressway damn near shut down. Traffic you can't go anywhere with. This week they're shutting down even more stuff for this NASCAR race, which is an absolute embarrassment. $280 a ticket. And it's going to inconvenience like 95% of for the wealth of five. Anyway, that's what we're going here. But anyway, is there any history of the market either during 4th of July week or during election years or anything that wants you to be bullish or bearish, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, that the market, I mean, you look at the historical standards of the, you know, presidential election year, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, you know, trying to remain in office, the market has performed fairly well. What you know, whether the circumstances are the government is doing things to, you know, propagate that, or it's just a continuation of a trend. A lot of people have been saying, you know, the Fed's going to lower rates before the election. I'm not of that belief. But I mean, it's been a good year in the market. If you look for, you know, taking into account inflation, well, maybe it's not, you know, the greatest year, but yes, the market is following with the presidential cycle of having good returns leading up into the election.
How can you, at some point, and maybe not, maybe not, I mean, obviously, I talked to an awful lot of clients. I talked to people that have a lot of money in their 401ks and essentially investing every week. I think it's fair to say, Joel, the market hasn't, in the last 3-4 weeks, it hasn't been all that busy. But boy, just about every night, there's mutual fund buying, it seems. I mean, any little move in the market, last night not so much, but every other night, I mean, you could be unchanged during the day and all of a sudden the spoos run 20 on the close and everything buys. Everybody, I mean, there's some break here between, I'll say, somebody like me who sits there and looks at, looks at like the Microsoft, which is leading the world here, Microsoft and Apple. And you look at the two of them and you say, my God, they've never had this kind of PE before. They've never had this kind of, revenue to share price before. No company of that size personally ever has. And yet, people come in, they put money to work, and I say, well, you know, let's do an index maybe if you want to be in, and guess what? I'm buying Microsoft and Apple today. Because how do I get around it? And yet, someplace, somewhere, those two roads are going to collide. And I don't mean...
A couple things here, Chief. One, you know, you're talking about, you know, kind of the malaise in the market that's been. I mean, we've been in if you look at the SPY, we've been in a trading range for the last couple of weeks between 540 and 550. S&P, the volume has been declining. I've talked to some market pundits, and they're saying that now, and I don't have any empirical proof of this, is that, you know, the change into T+1 kind of change the way that you do things and, you know, the commitments that you're willing to make to the markets. And I think maybe I have some managers, you know, pulling back a little bit in their aggressiveness. Also, you're coming into summertime. You know, historically a little bit slower time in the markets. And let's not forget that we just came off a quad witch expiration. And although the fireworks, the Russell rebalance, the things that we saw really did not give us a strong determination of whether, boy, oh, this Q3, is this going to be just like Q2, right? That we're just going to have a solid bid and sail the 5,600. More what I'm seeing right now, of course, anything can change in the blank of, you know, in the blink of an eye, is that the market's tired. And there may have, maybe you got your buyers and your Microsofts and your Apples and NVIDIAs and your Googles and the Amazons. But there's just true separation in this market. I mean, the IWM is going absolutely nowhere. So we're kind of continuing the trend of the strong get stronger, the poor get poorer. And you would think that, you know, lower interest rates are what's going to help some of these solar stocks or the IWM. When you did get a whiff of lower inflation last week or 2 weeks ago, the stocks went down. So it just could be the way it is forever. That we're, you know, we're not going to worry about the small caps. We're not going to worry about companies that are not making money. It's all about owning the big boys.
Well, that's
and until that trend continues, folks, this market's just going to be held up by whatever, Magnificent 5 and Magnificent 7.
I think, though, Joel, and this is the part that I'm trying to get my message here, which I'm pretty bad at this morning, it appears. You're right, the markets sort of look stagnant, but in terms of value, it really isn't, because I mean, look at the look at this. Apple is up since May, where are we here, since June 10th, okay, which is not very long ago, right, is up $350 billion in market cap. And Microsoft has got to be, I'm not gonna say it's that much, but it's got to be another 100 and some. So those two stocks are up way more in market cap than all the other stuff you and I are talking about are down. I mean, the actual value of the market, because these stocks are so damn big, is incredible. I mean, it hasn't been a stagnant last 2 weeks in terms of market value.
Of those stocks. And NVIDIA, in the same thing, and the Google and the Amazon. I mean, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
They
show absolutely no sign of falling. So you just got to let them get bigger.
I'm not debating that. What I'm saying is, if you actually looked at the market value, what looks like a stagnant last 6 weeks has been anything but. In terms of money value of the whole market. I mean, who cares? I mean, I do, because I have a lot of people involved in it, and so do you. I mean, the Russell might be down 2%. It's not $400 billion, is it?
There's a shift, there's a dynamic going on in the market that is nothing new, is that the market doesn't care about the small caps.
And or mid caps or dividend stocks or any of those things.
Yep. Maybe a little bit of safety, you know, in utilities, or, you know, maybe, you know, oil has its pockets, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a rotation in the financials, but it's very, you know, the reason we don't go down is because when they are peeling back to those stocks, they're going to other places. And so, you know, you look at the, you know, the close from yesterday, and with all these major stocks, major in the green, you know, market had a pop at the end of the day.
Yep.
Week after hours, and now we're down 27 handles again. Those stocks are in the red. Now, the script is that they just catch a bit right away this morning, and we go right back to unchanged. To me, the buyers are a little bit on strike. They're not as willing to reset here after this expiration from this level to get long, sell their calls, and just, you know, laugh all the way to the bank. But 7:48, I got a hop.
All right, buddy, take care.
I'll be back next week.
All right. Do we have Kenny?
I don't see Kenny yet, but we do have Carl and Hal.
Well, we have Carl. Want to bring him back on until you get Kenny?
Yeah, you can do that.
Hey, you know, I'm not. I'm hopefully you and Kevin don't think that I'm doing a serious argument. I'm just saying. Maybe I'm just more beaten up because I've done a lot of expert witness stuff, and I see how this stuff works. And recently, and you know what, the world of the legal world, small versus big, is so different. I mean, Kevin's right. Maybe it was a small company that got this to the Supreme Court, and they got some lawyer. Maybe they just had a good case. But we're talking about, you know, winning the lottery here. I mean, the legal system is so shut out to other people. Now I can't imagine me walking into a some kind of stupid case here in the city of Chicago with an administrative law person saying you've got no right to be here, and me winning the case. Do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the look. Don't take from my rather strong defense of this series of decisions that I'm saying that I think that you know, that the little guy's actually, you know, notching significant wins. Okay, I mean, because believe me, I've seen plenty of the, you know, the bad side of it. But fortunately, not in my personal life, but from other people that I know that have gotten it in the butt. And the reality is that we live in a world where the constraints of the Constitution and the separation of powers that are supposed to, you know, supposed to bind everybody within our government have been abused for so long and in such an obscene sort of way. You know, I mean, if you look at what Tennessee Blue Cross said, you think they just look at, you know, I mentioned it, they just got ordered to pay $700,000 to somebody that they illegally fired under the vaccine mandates. But they've doubled down on it.
Oh yeah, they're not going to back off. That's my point.
Well, they're going to have to fork up the money, because you know what? The way it works in civil cases, when you lose, if you decide like this, well, and they did something rather stupid too, which actually, you'd think that at some point somebody would pull one of these people aside and say, you know, you guys made a stupid mistake doing what you did already. You are compounding the error by issuing these kinds of public statements after the judgment comes in from the jury, because this wasn't a judge that made this decision, it was a jury trial, and you lost, and not a little, okay? And the thing is, though, is that here's the thing. They tried and successfully ran the diversity jurisdiction argument and got the case removed to federal court, thinking that they had a better chance of beating it there, all right? Which, you know, you or I is a, you know, not a big corporation. Yeah, good luck doing that, right?
Oh yeah.
But they ran that argument. The problem, and as you know, as somebody who studied an awful lot of law over the time, and I paid for some very good legal advice when I ran my company. I a very very well known and good firm on retainer in Chicago. They told me several times when I thought about, okay, you know, do I need to go after these guys in court? Do I need to sue this particular entity for whatever reason? And they said, look, the reality of the situation is that if you're going to bluster and BS, and, you know, you pay us, that's what we'll do. if that's the way it works, you want to do that in state court. You do that in federal court, you're asking to get sanctioned.
Oh, yeah, well, the federal court didn't ever lose. It's impossible. Federal court wins 95% of the cases.
Well, in the civil realm, you just don't try to pull stuff like that in federal court. Okay, you're yeah, asking to get slapped in a really serious way, and so, you know, they went ahead and they removed the case successfully, so, and then they got butt pounded as a consequence. It blew up in their face instead of working in their favor. And so, you know, they probably would have been better off staying in the state system and, you know, and trying to hive it off to, well, you know, this is Tennessee specific, you know, that kind of thing, right? And go through the Tennessee appellate system rather than have it now in federal. I think they're going to regret that decision. It is going to make it virtually impossible for them to get it reversed, and ultimately they're going to end up having to fork up the $700,000. And the other thing is that if you want to appeal a federal decision in the civil system, you have to post up the money. So,
oh, without a doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah, so they're going to have to fork it up into an escrow account along with the accrued interest and continue to make the interest deposits as the, you know, as the appeal process progresses.
Plus, I think it's like 7 or 10%.
Yes, it is. It's not small.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to fork up the cash in advance in order to file the appeal. So, every once in a while. And I mean, here's the other thing, too. Why is it, you know, all the liberals, they were also gung-ho about, Facebook and Twitter / X, Google, all these guys and their censorship in various areas. And, oh, you know, that's they're private businesses. They have a right to do that, da-da-da-da-da-da. Even though they've held themselves out as the town square, even though they've held themselves out as free speech corridors, all of a sudden when the speech is something they don't want, whether it's on the, you know, the vaccines and the COVID restrictions, or whether it's on gay pride and whatever have you, whatever it is, when they love whatever that particular topic is, then the censorship is perfectly fine. When it's the other way around, well, no, it's absolutely.
That's the way people are.
I know, Chief, but here's the thing. The other case that came out, okay, in this last day, okay, the last day of opinions, was NetSuite, which is the Florida and Texas anti-censorship laws. The states lost.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, and so, you know, and by the way, I read that opinion all the way from one end to the other, too, and I can't argue with it. It is well reasoned in the context of the jurisdictional issues at question. And by the way, one of the cases that they cited was the rather infamous Miami case, which is not that far back. It was during my time when I lived in Florida, and it was politically related, as this one is, because that was a law as well. Absolutely consistent with this, the analytical question, and they did send it back for further proceedings, but the analytical question is the same sort of analytical question that, you know, they raised in the Trump immunity thing, which is, in the context of the current action, are Trump's actions, you know, or whoever's actions, but in this
thing
case,
it's not whoever. That's the point. It's not whoever. Well, it's only in their party. That's the problem.
Well, you're right, Chief, but the thing is this. Were the actions official acts, or were they private acts? Were they actions that were taken in the performance of the president's duties? And by the way, one of the places that they went with this, and the left, of course, took it completely out of context, read it the wrong way, on purpose, I would argue, is that you can't prosecute Trump for having a conversation about the election with a member of the executive, specifically Pence. So talking with him about alternate electoral slates and things like this, talking about him, you can't prosecute him for the conversation. He has an absolute privilege to have the conversation.
I don't disagree with that.
A lot of people seem to think they can, and one of the elements of these charges is that he talked with people. Not that he did something, but that he had a conversation.
Some of the conversations that he had were with people that were in power to act. That's a problem.
Well, now, wait a minute.
If I have a conversation with the police chief where I say, I don't think you should go arrest that guy who just committed murder, it's more than just a conversation if I'm the mayor.
But that is not a criminal offense if it is within...
That's my huge problem with this whole mess. I'm not being articulate here at all, as you always are, but my point is, this thing, I don't necessarily... If you were to ask me to rule on it, I would say, hey, if you're in your official capacity, you're pretty much immune, and by the way, if you're not, you're not, which is what they came out with. So, essentially, right?
Well, essentially with the bottom... Yeah, the bright line test... Well, actually, it was a tripartite test. So, you know, Biden loves to claim that in the context of abortion, that Roe was a bright line test. Anybody can have an abortion anytime for any reason. That's not what they held. okay? Now, it got overturned by Dobbs, but that's not what Roe held. It is, however, what the left has argued has been the case since the 1960s, and it's a lie.
I don't disagree. Where I'm going with this is that I look at things maybe a little differently. I look at this and I say, okay, we have an amazingly divided country to the point where we have people on the court that I can tell you exactly how they're going to vote, right? And which is not right. So, okay, I see this, like I said, on paper, the idea that if you're doing something in the act of being a president, are you pretty much immune if you drop a bomb and hits the wrong guy? Yeah, I'd say you are. But if you're doing stuff that's not necessarily being a president, you run out and murder somebody, then I'd say you aren't. I mean, to me, it makes common sense. Yet,
right.
If I look forward, I say, okay, now, when is this actually going to be used? It's going to be used if we got some goofball in office who's dancing on the head of a pin. And, oh, by the way, it's going to be judged by some judge that is going to be totally one side or the other and is going to determine make his determination on who's in office. Well, I don't want that either. And that's where we are all along the line here. None of this.
I don't disagree with you on that, Chief. But the thing is that asking the court system to do something that is not within what a court does is an unreasonable ask.
I understand that. I mean, I try to, but my point
But that's the root of what you're where you're
okay.
Going
so now they're going to kick Trump's whatever case they're talking about this morning. I was reading. They're going to kick that back to the judge. The judge is going to have to rule on whether or not it was an official act or not.
Okay. Each of the elements of the charge.
Right. So the judge is going to sit there and go. Now take January 6th for instance.
Right.
The guy's 10 days from going out of office. So I'm going to say most of what he did probably wasn't an official act. I would
say that most of what he did on January 6th, by definition, was the act of a candidate, and that a candidate is never taking an official act,
right?
Because he's a candidate, he's not in office yet,
right?
Okay, trying to get reelected is the action of a common citizen because you're a candidate,
right?
Okay, so most of that, yes. But here's the other thing.
But I mean, the judge. My concern is if he gets kicked to an appellate court judge or whoever it is that was appointed by him, the decision is going to be one that's been different than somebody's appointed by Obama. That I have a problem with.
Well, you know, funny thing is that stuff's been going on since.
Except we're not supposed to be like that when you have a lifetime thing.
I know, Chief, but you know what? This is why they're this is supposedly why they're lifetime appointments, right? Is that it's supposed to prevent that from happening. And, you know, it's the interesting thing is that when you look, particularly in the context of the Supremes, I mean, in the context of the you know, the hundreds or thousands of federal judges that get appointed, and, you know, they all have lifetime appointments too, by the way. But in the context of the Supremes, it's rather interesting. You know, both Stevens and Soter were expected to be something very different than what they ended up being on
without
the bench. I mean, Scalia is probably the only one who actually, you know, everyone thought he was going to be blah, and that's what they got, right?
But he was a different sort of cat. That he was a brilliant man, and he was somebody everybody liked. So he brought a side to the conversation that I don't think was wrong being there, even though I disagree with a lot of his conclusions. But I would have loved to have him in the room with me, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah, and then you have.
I don't have a problem with people disagree with me. You obviously could figure that out.
Right? Well, yeah, I mean, you know, but you look at.
I never learned anything with somebody who agreed with me, by the way.
Well, that's true, you know. But you look at what Roberts did with Obamacare, and that is an extreme obscenity. Okay, if you've never actually read that decision, you ought to go back and read it. All right. He rewrote the statute from the bench, literally.
Carl, we got to dash here, but there's two kinds of people in the world. And I don't know which one either one of us are, but you know I think you probably suspect, like I do. I'll be more articulate. Try to be that when the guy that they're going to appoint to the Supreme Court goes in and has the big meeting with the president. and whoever else is in there. You and I would love to be a roach on the wall and they're listening in, because they're gonna make this guy promise to do God knows what. Unless you,
oh yeah,
I mean it's an absurd sort of situation. Now some people walk out of there and say, okay, I needed that bleeped up interview just so I get the job. But once I'm in here, the guy doesn't have any control over me. I'm gonna do what I think is right. There's gonna be those kinds of people. Then there's gonna be other people that said I owe the guy long after he's dead.
Right.
You know, I mean, which I don't quite get. You know, but there are people that are gonna be like that, and people are gonna believe either way, right? There's gonna be somebody who said, you know, I got $40,000 from State Farm for my judgeship, and when I finally get a State Farm case, I got to sit here and rule in their favor. There's other people that said that was a long time ago. That was a contribution. They just wanted me to do a good job. And if, by the way, they lose the case, they lose the case. There's those kind of people too. I don't know how many, but there's a few. And how do you tell?
Well, it's one of the challenges of humanity, right? Is that people lie.
Carl, thank you. We do have a show on Friday, so we'll see you on Friday. We do not have one on Thursday since it's 4th of July.
Yep.
So, by the way, just so everybody knows, we're going to Lou is going to pile on tomorrow with Kevin, so they can gang up on me, which is fine.
All right.
That's all right. I might have to. Well, Brendan's still not doing as hot as he would like to be. I need somebody on my side to fight with. I can handle it. I can handle it. S&P futures down 24, NASDAQ futures down 116. You guys are all sometimes against me, but I can't think of three better guys to talk to be honest with you. You and Kevin.
Thank you.
Because I think it's fun. I think we draw the best out of each other, and isn't that the whole idea? But we'll be right back with Professor Hal.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Carter on the board. SP Futures down 24. NASDAQ Futures down 112. We had one of the big meme stock was this one with was Chewy. It went flying up the other night and it came flying all the way back down as the little kitty or roaring kitty, whatever the hell he is, claims he has 6.6. Well, he must have. He registered with the SEC 6.6% of the stock. Do we have Professor Hal?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
How are you, bud?
I'm in Virginia.
Really? Well, that's a good thing. You're doing teaching down there, or are you vacationing?
No. I came down to, we have a motorhome on a piece of land down here, and came down to get the water hooked up so we can use it this summer without having to use the, you know, the common bath. They have this common bath. It's an RV resort about 60 miles south of D.C. So just came down to maybe do some cleanup, grab some stuff that my mother-in-law needs in her house in Brooklyn, like, you know, something to trim the bushes and whatnot. And then
does that thing move?
It's just too expensive now. It's too expensive to drive it around. And so what we did is we decided to just park it and park it on a piece of land, and we kind of use it as a summer vacation house.
Okay.
Because the place where we have it at, it has swimming pools. It has an adult rec center. It has a kids rec center with video games, pool, hockey, air hockey, ping pong, foosball. We got hiking. We can go. They got several lakes. We can go fishing. So it's really kind of a cool place to get away from New York.
What? Are we up on milk crates, or what are we talking about?
No, it's just parked on gravel that I had installed. I put a gravel pad in.
Okay.
We just have it parked on top of the gravel, so it's really nice.
Does this thing sit on its tires, does they have the stabilizers come down?
Yeah, I mean, the motorhome's pretty stable. It doesn't rock around too much. So, I mean, the springs are pretty stiff in those things.
Oh, so you don't have one that my relatives had in Ohio. Of course, the guy's got nothing but money. Had the big metal things that came down and hit the ground, sort of the weight wasn't on the tires.
Yeah, I'm not that wealthy to have a motorhome like that.
God. Hey, you know, I'm sitting here. I've been racking my brain here for a day. So this has nothing to do with stocks or jacks. This Hurricane Beryl. It's already a Category 5, but it's not fortunate if you're in Jamaica or someplace. It's going to come through those places. I'm sitting there going, that is a very unusual name. Where the hell did I hear that name before? And I'm sitting there going, I know I saw it one place. You ever heard the name Beryl before?
Yeah, we had an associate dean.
Really?
Whose first name was Beryl. Yeah, she was a really nice lady.
Thought it's a man's name.
Maybe it depends on how you spell it.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, she was a great associate dean at A&T State University. I'm not sure if she's still there or not, but yeah. When I was there back in from 2004 to 2013, her and her husband and I think we had an office next to each other. Or her husband and I had an office next to each other. They had offices next to each other.
Well, you know where I chatted him up. This is going to freak you out, and you're probably going to hang up. You know where I remember it from? Did you ever read War and Remembrance?
No, huh?
Well, when the guy was in the concentration camp with the niece or something, and the kid, his brother was named Beryl, and he smuggled himself into the concentration camp and got the kid out.
Wow.
He was one of these guys in the resistance movement. And his name was Beryl. I'm thinking, where the hell did I hear that name? That's the only place I've ever heard the name before, till this hurricane.
Yeah, it's not a very common name. Yeah.
No. But it's not a very common hurricane either. A grade 5 this early in the year is like a record, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, climate evolves. I mean, we had an ice sheet over Manhattan about, 40,000 years ago that was twice the height of the Empire State Building. And
yeah,
about 15, 20,000 years ago, the coastline of New York was 250 miles closer to Europe. And Staten Island and Manhattan weren't islands. They were peaks of mountains.
Yeah,
climate change, and people from Asia, you know, crossed over the Bering Strait. It wasn't two different continents, right? So, you know, this could be global warming, but it also could be a natural cycle, right? I mean, if seas are rising, I don't think they are. I mean,
no, they're not rising that much.
Biden and Obama have million-dollar properties right on the ocean, and they're not moving, so. I'm not too worried about it.
God. You just don't want to be in a way. You just don't want to be in the way of one of these things. But the thing I find interesting is, you know, but a lot of these records don't go back that far. But the El Nino was a pretty rough El Nino, but we had the world's warmest winter last year. We had like one cold week. And we had hardly any snow, which is fine with me.
Well, you know, in New York, it was pretty. I thought it was pretty mild here. It was pretty. And then the spring was pretty mild too.
Well, that's the case with El Nino. It's moving the coast from El Nino to La Nina. But they claim in recorded history, this is the quickest change from one to the other.
Yeah,
which is interesting. Yeah.
Recorded history. Recorded history is about a couple hundred years old in America.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there was things probably happening that humans didn't observe, right? I mean, humans probably observed it, but they probably weren't written down.
Well, you didn't observe a hurricane if it didn't hit you back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. If there's no people there, you didn't really observe it, right? I suppose it's probably in the tree record, right? Tree Record.
Did you ever, oh God, you got me started. Did you ever read a book called Catastrophe?
No,
See, you know, I gotta get you, you guys out of it. This is a, it's absolutely.
I read too many economic articles.
Well, yeah,
I watch movies that have legal or economic consequences in them.
Well, I'm all into reading so much of the current events and stuff that people send me that, you know, the idea of picking up a book at the end of the day, I'm like, God, I've already read a bunch of stuff. Remember?
I know. My eyes get tired.
Did you ever read A Man Called Intrepid? And whenever, I don't know, I read this book, and I, when I read it, I just, that's why I have such a view of some of our politicians today. The guy, he was the head of, the guy named was Bill Stevenson. He was the head of the British Secret Service during the war. And the dude was a, not only he was a light heavyweight boxing champ, or I don't know about champ, but pretty darn good. And he must have been in the Army at one point or whatever he was, in secret something. He was one of the inventors of TV. He also was a master mathematician, you know, like a PhD in math or something. And they asked him to take this role on, and he's like, you got to be kidding. But he said the reports he would get from the field, you contrast this with both of the people we have running for president who don't think they should read anything, at least one of them doesn't, said he would read the equivalent of a Victorian novel a day and retain all of it.
Wow.
And you talk about people like this as being guys that should be in these kind of positions, and you look at the people we have, you know, running, that you wonder how they would even run a hot dog stand. It's almost like we deserve what we get or something. We get what we deserve. I mean, but
yeah, I was pretty upset Thursday night. I thought it was a complete monster.
Well, you have two.
That was horrible. I can't believe it.
You have two of arguably the worst presidents we've ever had arguing over who was worse.
It was depressing.
It's like you and I played softball, and you had four errors, and I had five, and we're trying to figure out who had the worst game defensively. What kind of debate is that? At least
the best part of the debate was when they were arguing over whose handicap was lower.
You know, I missed that part. I got to go back.
It was bad.
I went to take, I didn't want to, but I took media training. Boy, you sure can't tell by listening, huh? And one of the things was when you get interviewed, of course, these guys got nothing but money. They can do whatever they want. But if a regular person goes to get interviewed, like you or I, and say you more than me, if you write something that people are interested in or something, and somebody goes to talk to you about your book, they said you have to have your, not necessarily your cliches like in Bull Durham, but you have to have your talking points, you know, to a point, because you can't just say the same thing no matter what the question is, but you have to have your talking points, and you have to be able to deflect. And one of the first things we said was, and this was said to you, contrary to the thing the other night with the two goofballs, was, you know, if somebody walks up to you and say, hey, Tom, how's your golf game? And your first thing you're supposed to say is, now you couldn't pay for this airtime, right? So you got to use it.
Yeah.
So the first thing you're supposed to say is, you know, golf game's not so good because I've been spending so much time on this campaign, and here's why. I mean, you accept the part that you used to play golf, and now you say, I don't have much time to play golf because I'm concentrating on this, and here's why. Here's how I'm going to help you. As you can see, I didn't learn too much from this, but I mean that's what you can't get 2 minutes of national exposure and talk about your golf game.
Yeah. I would say I was minus 18, and they would say, really? And I go, yeah, I lost 18 balls.
Yeah, I bet you're a guy like Dr. J. You know somebody is when you come up with you give when you lose balls. I mean somebody. I mean I. played a lot of golf, you know, I was never that good. But I would say, yeah, I had two lost balls, meaning two balls that I had to take a penalty for because I lost them. That would be my definition, right? But now Dr. J's would be, Well, I lost 12, but I found 10. I'm down 2. I found 10 other ones when I was losing. I was looking for the 12 that I lost. John, it's not the way you're supposed. The point is, did you lose one and had to take a penalty? So it's not whether you found somebody else's while you were there. And you got to stick it in your pocket.
The worst golf courses are the links courses. Oh, God, wind, yeah. Like in eastern Idaho, in Briggs, Teton, Idaho. They have a links course there.
I've been there.
The wind blows like 20 miles an hour. Oh.
I've been there.
Man, you can hit the green. It'll roll off the green into the 3-foot rough, and you can't find it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that day I was minus 18, but I found 12. I jumped in the water and found 12 because I ran out of balls.
You're lucky there's no alligator in there. You're lucky there's no alligator in there.
Well, when I went to Bald Head Island in North Carolina, I played golf there, and the wind was just blowing. It was a links-style course. My balls been blown around everywhere. I ran out of golf balls, and I wasn't going to jump in the water because there were alligators in the water.
Yeah. Well, they put a course here.
Actually, one was an alligator was sunbathing on the fairway.
Hope you didn't whack it with a ball.
No, no.
Well, they have a course. They have a course here, Harborside. The thing is built on a garbage dump, and it's a link.
Yeah, I think a lot of golf courses. I think a lot of golf courses in city parks are like that. Yeah.
God. Well, anywho, what do you make of? We have to do a little bit. Regarding the market, the valuations, the politics of the Supreme Court decisions. I mean, where do you want to start? I mean, I didn't see any here that really bear any economic kind of fruit. Some of the stuff regarding the administrative law things, which I think are burying some industries, I just don't see any. I mean, I might be into. I mean, I'm not arguing with my other guys now. Be honest, am I being too cynical about these decisions? Don't make any difference. You know, I mean, I it's hard to say like no difference, but I mean, no administrative law judge is going to lose his job today, are they?
Oh, sorry, I got disconnected from you.
Am I being, you know, too cynical? And are they going to make any difference to the common man? I mean, is anybody today who has a administrative law judge appearance somewhere, streets and sand, wherever the hell it happens to be, going to get the phone call and say we fired everybody? Maybe we'll see in civil court, maybe not. I mean, I don't see that happening anywhere. Do you?
Are you regarding the Chevron deference?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think on Thursday I was very depressed. But when I woke up on Friday and later on I read the news that day, I was actually relieved by the overturn of the Chevron deference, because the Chevron deference gave. It tilted the legal system toward federal agencies. And the fishermen in this case, I mean, really, if you think about it, government, I think what happened with the Chevron deference is moral hazard. The government has this bias toward it. The system is tilted toward federal agencies. And for 40 years, it was able to interpret ambiguous law in its favor. And regular people, businesses or whatnot, really couldn't, had no really real way to challenge it. The rules and regulations got pushed through. And so with the Chevron deference, it reverses that. And now the courts can't just defer to the agency, right? I think it restores democracy. And so I was pretty happy with it.
I think it's an absolutely spectacular ruling. 40 years too late. But yeah, I mean, but I guess when I'm grousing here, and I guess that's what I'm doing really. What I'm grousing is, this has been going on for 40 years, and I know Kevin and Carl were pissed at me for saying that, but I've been in the industry I'm in for 40 years, and for 40 years the bureaucrats, I'll use the agencies, whatever term you want to use, depending if you want to just be disparaging or not, every single day they think of a way to do more with the same rule from 40 years ago. Every day they come at you from another direction. There are a bunch of 25-year-olds sitting there trying to think of another way to regulate somebody with the idea that more regulation is better than less. Yeah. And I watch this stuff. I mean, even this guy, Roaring Kitty. Now, you might ask yourself, why does the chief have such a hard ass for this guy and people like him on TV? Well, because at our yearly compliance thing, which we have every year, we're our compliance people, we go through all the new initiatives that FINRA has. And for somebody like me in the business, okay, who has a client and has opinions on stocks and things like that, I mean, I never hold myself out to be a stock expert to clients or anybody, because I'm not. I know something about values. I can do some research, but as to whether or not it's going up or down the next day, I never once told anybody I know that, because I don't.
Yeah.
But I look at the disparity on this. I'm a registered person. They actually had the balls to come out with some idea, and whether half of them are female or male, it doesn't matter. They actually had the balls to say, because I'm registered, any opinion I give anybody at any time is like actionable.
Yeah.
So the rule is, if I'm sitting next to you and I don't know you from Adam, and you say I'm a professor of mathematics or business or economics or all those things, which you are, you say, hey, what do you think about Delta Airlines? And I go, I don't know. I mean, airlines look like they've been running up, and they might be getting a little too happy here. And I never see you again. And you sell your Delta Airlines. Allegedly, it could be actionable because I gave you a recommendation because I'm registered. Yet the same morons watch TV all day long, and people very connected to the business, people that are money managers, people do nothing but give recommendations all day long. And people follow them instead of me. I mean, the idea that this ruling is going to do anything different with this bureaucratic nation state that has developed in my industry and others is lunacy. They're not going to take it apart.
Well, I think it... at the margin, maybe it helps a little bit, right?
If somebody comes after me, and if somebody comes after me and I have $1 million and a big hair up my ass to run it all the way to the Supreme Court, I have a 50-50 chance of winning. But that's not going to happen to anybody common that I know of. When's the last time you know anybody who got a case to the Supreme Court?
Well, the fishermen did.
Yeah, okay. It does happen. I'm not denying that. But, I mean, did he pay for that, or did some lawyer take it? I mean, what are the damages?
Well, no, the fishermen didn't pay for the. They got the. They were represented by two conservative / libertarian legal defense funds, and I tweeted the names on Twitter. But yeah, the two legal firms took the case pro bono. It was at no cost to these fishermen companies.
Okay, so what is that going to do? Now, what is that? That's, by the way, very entrepreneurial on their part. Because now, what has that done to their law practice?
Oh, I mean, getting a win at the Scotus?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's great marketing, right? So they have all these libertarians and conservatives seeing their victories at the Scotus. They're probably pulling in contribution after contribution. But the moral hazard of the federal government here, they've been able to do this for 40 years, right? They just take these ambiguous laws that Congress writes. They interpret however they want. They put in these rules that can't really be challenged. And think about how stupid the Commerce Department was. It told these fishermen companies, that they have to put basically a cop on their boat to observe him. But not only that, they had to pay their salary.
Right.
Because there was no funding for this program, right? That's like the government putting a cop in my car and issuing me a ticket every time I exceed the speed limit.
I believe the term is unfunded mandate.
Yeah, and on top of that, not only is he sitting in my passenger seat, I'm paying for him to sit in my passenger seat while he writes me tickets every time I go over the speed limit.
Right.
Well, it's completely unfair. So anybody that is pro-democracy or pro-republic, whatever you want to call our system of government now, whatever it is, I think they should be happy with Friday's ruling, because I think it inches us toward... Back away from this tyranny of state.
Except we reached a line in the sand where nobody's paying attention to anybody. I mean, right now, today, if you call up and said, hey, Chief, somebody dropped me, a bunch of money. I think I'd want you to manage it. And we'd start to open up an account. Unbeknownst to you, I'm checking you out through Interpol and every place else. Because that's what we've been forced to do. Even though you are a U.S. citizen, you're a professor, you're on... You're obviously able to get on planes and in cars. You have a driver's license. No hint whatsoever that you are a crook or a money launderer. It's up to me and my firm to investigate whether you are or you aren't. And if it turns out we miss you on Interpol, we're liable. Yet the police force is not liable. I mean this is insane. This is the bureaucratic state we're in. The Supreme Court, maybe if they helped a little bit, you know, thank God for you. But I'm thinking it's too far gone. It's way too far gone. Or am I being too cynical?
Well, another thing when you mention the police, another thing we have to scale back a little bit is the immunity the police officers get, right?
They don't get any immunity around here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had this immunity, and it's been around for a while, right? Any member of the executive branch has this immunity. And I think if you're an elected official of the government or you're a police officer, you shouldn't get special treatment. Your job is to uphold the laws, so you should be held to a higher standard.
I tell you what, the police now are being held to a lot higher law than anybody else right now.
Yeah. The acquired immunity, I think that has to be revisited.
Well, I mean, what the immunity is, if you know, if I don't know where you go with that. I mean, if you arrest somebody and they, all of a sudden they were found innocent, that doesn't mean you're a criminal. I mean, if people do the job like they're supposed to do, it shouldn't be a problem. But if you don't, then you got a problem, right? I mean, I mean, if we have somebody in office,
I've been watching Ozark, and I'll tell you, I mean, it's eye-opening. You know, I'm not sure how much of it's truth or not, but the things that the FBI in this show get away with just boggles the mind. You know, being in bed with cartels because they have this arrangement where the FBI gets all these cash seizures on highways in America. I mean, it's just, I wonder how much of that is true. How much of it is...
I think it's fair to say that I don't know if we want to limit it, but I'm going to say that if you were to become president tomorrow and slice the CIA budget in half, they would find a way to make it up.
Yeah, I think if I were to become president or you were to become president, we scaled back the national security state, I think we'd probably we'd have a news report on CNN or Fox or whatever, where we were lifting barbells on our weight bench and we dropped a barbell on our neck.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's
an accident.
I mean, it's an issue. And when you have a country that's as old as we are, I mean, you look around at all the other democracies that have been around the world, they get to the 200, 250-year number, they start to have some trouble. And they seem to go down from within, not from without, necessarily. Yeah. What did Jefferson say? A little revolution every now and then is a good thing or something?
Well, I think it comes from moral hazard. If you're a federal bureaucrat and, you know, you get away with things that most people don't get away with, it kind of creates this mystique within yourself that you're kind of above the law.
Well, what about the bigger companies? If we were to be, not we, because I wouldn't want to do it, if you were going to be in office here in Illinois or in Chicago, you would have to essentially take back the streets where people feel like they could walk down the block, which they don't know. I mean, they absolutely do not. I mean, in some areas maybe people do, but boy, if you got your ears open around you and you read the papers, maybe you shouldn't. I mean, there was a guy and I live in Lincoln Park, which is supposed to be, you know, one of the nicest neighborhoods in the city. Last week, a block from my house, damn near right across the street from the Tripoli, my drinking hole, there was a guy gets busted into his coach house, gets knifed like a couple of times in bed. Somehow the neighbors saw the guy, and they apprehended the guy in front of my house.
The neighbors.
Well, somebody saw the guy leaving. You know, this dreadlocked black dude, and he got arrested in front of my house. Well, what if the girl downstairs was out walking her dog or something?
Yeah.
Or I'm not that. I was never that tough, and I'm sure not that tough anymore. What if I'm coming back from the Triple A and I run into this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about very close now, but I think I know, what has to happen in this city for us, the citizenry, to take the streets back. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be any part of that. But I know what has to happen. I know what has to happen.
You know,
I know what has to happen in the drug industry. If all of a sudden you're going to find a way to not spend $800 billion a year that you shouldn't be spending. I know that every one of these hospitals has been put up that are these magnificent places that are built really for the bureaucracy and not for the people in that are sick. And it, not that they don't care people that are sick, they do. But the square footage is what? 50% administrative, 50% people? Well, first of all, that doesn't cut it. I mean, I would have to say that no drug company gets to charge $1,000 for something that they 5 hours from. I'd tear apart these patent laws, but I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I know what has to happen to straighten this shit out, but I don't want to do it. Why would I sentence myself to that?
Yeah. I mean, if you start doing that kind of stuff and you have that kind of power,
then you become what you detest. You become the emperor.
If you're actually successful at scaling this back, I think you wake up one day and there's a news report about you. You took too many aspirin.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
That's the reality of it, I think.
But I also know that if people are at a point, even the mafia, to a certain extent, knew enough was enough. You could take a certain amount of money from people, but you can't take any more. They got to the point they had some common sense. I don't think government has that common sense. And I don't think the street crime in Chicago.
The American Revolution was fought over 1-2% tax rate.
Yeah.
Right? And in America today, I mean, in some cities, it's probably close to 50%, right? With property tax, sales tax,
I'm going
to
say
income tax.
It's got to be over.
Yeah. In some cities, yeah.
Well, let's take a for instance. California, your high end on personal is what, 35 after the Trump tax cuts? What's California if you make over $1 million, like 15 or something?
I think it's about 11 to 15 somewhere in there, yeah.
Right, let's call it 15. So now you're up to 50. I got to believe there's a sales tax, and I'm sure there's a property tax. There's, who knows what else? I mean, if you park your car, there's got to be a tax for the parking. I mean, I got to believe you're pushing 60 to 65 in California.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the solution to these poorly run cities and states is continued migration, out-migration of businesses.
If you flee, you have to use your noggin and find out where the hell you're fleeing to. And if you flee from Illinois to Wisconsin, I think with their state tax and everything else, I don't think they're any better than here. If you flee,
Place like Utah, Idaho, Tennessee, Texas.
Oh yeah, you're going to say Wyoming. Yeah, you're going to say Wyoming, but if you croak in Wyoming, the state of state tax takes your money away from you. You got to be real careful on every state you're looking
at.
Just don't die.
When you get ready to die in Wyoming,
then you
make sure you're downloaded into a Google bot.
Yeah, you got to move. You move the day before you croak.
Or download your brain, your thoughts, your memories into a Google bot, and then you'll be fine.
Well, I read this article, and of course I can't find it. My usual thing, me and the internet. I had to do with grading every state, like for real, it had to do with estate taxes. It had to do with, as a matter of fact, Iowa's got a big estate tax.
Iowa?
Yeah. Get a load of this. This is really weird. It's not weird because he's one of the nicest guys that ever walked. My brother, when he was working for GATX, this is long before he got in this industry. So we're talking, how many decades? Some guy that he was doing some stuff with where he was scrapping the old cars or whatever, he runs into this guy, and I don't know if the guy was sick or something, and Dan helped him out or whatever it was, and the guy said, I'm going to remember you. Dan, okay. Had to be 30 years later, 25 years later, Dan gets like $20,000 in the guy's will or something.
Wow.
But the thing of it is, I think the Iowa state tax was like 8 of it.
Wow.
Whatever the guy gave him, he ended up with like half. And it wasn't like 200,000. It was, 10 or 15 or something. And he ended up with like half. But I can't find this. But it took every single tax there was. And some of the states that you thought were, heaven aren't.
Yeah.
Even Indiana. I mean, the state tax is cheaper. But when you get your license plate for your car, I think every year you have to pay a percentage of the car's value or something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if it's a $75,000 new car, I think your plates are like $750 or something. Some, you know, huge number.
Every state has their little
trick bag.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Utah, it's not a 0% tax either. I mean, Utah's, I think, income tax is like 8%. But I think what I learned at Utah's economic summit I attended one year at Westminster was that I think the governor was saying that one reason why companies are coming to Utah is because their tax system is set and they haven't changed it. So that creates predictability. I think in states where things are being constantly raised and lowered, it creates uncertainty.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so I think businesses want to avoid political unpredictability. They
yeah,
want
which,
a
which,
place where they can...
But they're not guaranteeing you it's not going to change the minute you get there.
Yeah, yeah, they're not. But if you look at the history, you know, it's pretty much been the same for, I think, now 20 years.
Well, so, you know, Audrey obviously
that,
is...
That creates a little warm feeling in somebody's, you know, belly.
Well, Audrey obviously is very onto this stuff. She and Nancy, that's what she does for a living, is, you know, real estate. For a period of maybe pre-COVID to maybe the first year of COVID, there were people who were selling homes in Orland and places and buying places in Indiana. You could sell a place, you know, pick a number, $350, and buy the equivalent home in Crown Point or somewhere for $210. You know, it was that much of a difference. Well, that has pretty much evened up. As a matter of fact, somebody like within the last year or two did it, and the guy commutes to Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the city, in her infinite wisdom, sells off the Chicago Skyway to the usual crap. Sell it to somebody who raises the rates to a private place. Well, I think the tolls are now like $7 or $8 each way. You know, and it's a mile and a half long thing, or 2 miles. And plus, you have to be down a little piece of the Indiana toll road. So the guy commutes downtown and parks. It's costing him, you know, I'm going to say $10 a day each way. So $20 a day, he says, if you in the parking in Chicago, that if you add the $400 a month in tolls, he's not saving a stitch on the mortgage and the difference in the housing between Orland and wherever he is.
Yeah. Well, you also got to factor in the time component too, right?
Yeah.
He's spending all that time in the car.
I bet it doesn't take him any longer than it does to get from Orland. Orland's horrible.
Oh.
I mean, he might actually be gaining a minute or two, but...
Well, then that's a good thing then, if it's a wash in terms of...
Yeah, it's a wash, but I'm saying...
Benefit.
But he's $22 a day in tolls.
Yeah. Well, if it saves them, you know, an hour a day.
No. I'm going to say it's probably a wash. It's probably a.
As oh, say in terms of time.
Yeah, as they say in a trading floor, it's a scratch.
Yeah.
Even. SP futures down 22. We got to go to break. SP futures down 22. NASDAQ futures down 101. Can't say as I expected this because we were bullish yesterday. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamara Ricardo, having to listen to my grousing this morning. How bad is it, Ricardo? I'm just a guy for the common man. What can I say? Plus, I have a couple of instances when I was with some of these these administrative courts. You know, isn't the Chicago, if you get a parking ticket now, that's an administrative court, right? I think it is.
Not completely sure.
Well, that means you haven't had a parking ticket. Good for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, the S&P futures down 24 and the S&P futures down 114. We haven't had a bounce here yet this morning. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 207. That's over 1%, 1.1%. That's a big move. FTSE down 32, not as much, 0.4%. CAC around down 56.7%. And before this week, the next election, we're going to have somebody on, maybe Mr. Mike Murphy. I'm going to invite him for Friday. Maybe he can come on with Kevin and talk about some of the election stuff over there. It's kind of odd how that all works out. It's a three-prong sort of an election. Or in Asia, the other way, Nikkei is up 443, 1.1%. Over 40,000, 40,074. Very interesting. Hit new highs. Hang Seng up 50, trying to get back to 18,000, still a ways away. 17,769. Shanghai, trying to get back to the 3,000. It's up 2 points, made it halfway there. 29,97. Could not get all the way up. Yesterday, it was a way of review. Dow was up 50, S&P up 14, NASDAQ up 146. So we're down we're down maybe 60% of what we were up yesterday in the NASDAQ. Bonds. 10-year down 5 basis points, 4.43. The blend down 1 basis point, 2.59. Japan up 3 basis points, 109. These guys are up from 0.96 to 109 in probably 5 trading days. That's a big move for those guys. Oil up 86 cents, 84.24. Maybe thinking we're breaking out of this range. Yeah, I hope not, but maybe we are. Brent up 77 cents, 87.37. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.45. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.61. RBOB's up a dime in the last week, so when you go to the pump, don't be surprised when it's up a little bit. Gold up down 780, 23.38. Silver up 7 cents, 29.68. Trying to get back to 30 bucks. Whenever it does, it comes right back down. Copper up 2 cents, 4.44. We've got Bitcoin down 3.54, 62,856. And we have foreign exchange. And we have the euro 107.2. So the dollar has been strong over the last couple of weeks. It was over 108, so moderately. British pound 126.6. It was 27.7. So the dollar has been a little bit stronger. And we've got the yen 161.49. Remember when it went through 160? It was a big deal. Well, it's still going down against the dollar. It's 161 yen to the dollar. Those don't know how that reads. Ricardo, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:46 a.m. here in Chicago. 66 degrees right now with a high of 83. Breezy and warmer with a brief shower or two. Cloudy this morning, then times of clouds and sun this afternoon. Tonight will be cloudy, windy, and warm with a thunderstorm in the area late with a low of 71 degrees. Over in Phoenix, we got 90 degrees right now with a high of 112. Sunny and hot with dangerous heat. Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 89 degrees. On a traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 21 minutes, inbound Edens from Lane Cook 36 minutes, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf 27 minutes, looking at 19 minutes, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 27 minutes. On the sports, we got a couple of MLB games today. White Sox play the Guardians at 540 in Cleveland. The Cubs play the Phillies at 705 in Chicago, and the Diamondbacks play the Dodgers at 910 in Los Angeles. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Cubs are actually favored against the Phillies because the two of the best guys, Schwarber and whoever the guy is, are both out. They're both hurt. So the Phillies are kind of a weakened team. And they're actually underdogs to the lousy Cubs, which is
fingers
sort of,
crossed, man.
Yeah. But so, Hal, what we haven't talked much about the two things. China's inability to get their stuff going over there, certainly their market and everything else. They've been trying to put some money in Japan. The yen continues to get pummeled. Their interest rates are way below anybody else's, even though they have been going up. They were zero like forever, but now they're up to a little over 1%. What's happening in those two? I mean, what does the Bank of Japan have to do to get, you know, to protect? Well, the difference between 5% and 1% is quite a bit, right? So are they going to have to raise their rates a little bit to stop their currency draining away?
Well, I think what's happening in Japan is they've been doing it, 30, 40 years?
Yeah, it's a habit. It's a habit.
I mean, they keep buying. I think they're just monetizing all those debt, pushing the price high, right?
Yep.
They're kind of doubling down on what we were doing for about a 10-year period of time, right?
Yep.
From the end of the financial crisis through. We only did it for maybe 10 years. But they've been doing it probably, you know, several decades. China, what one problem with China is, I think the surveillance is so massive there. The people have lifted themselves out of poverty. The wages aren't as advantageous as they once were. So you got this surveillance state, you have the risk of your intellectual property being stolen. You have to be a minority owner of the company if you have an operation in China. The surveillance state is substantial. So I think firms are just kind of like staying away. And it seems like Xi Jinping is doing what Mao did. He's kind of locking in the current state of technology, thinking that it's going to work. And I just think it's a repeat of history. And history tends to repeat, and repeated history repeats repeatedly. So I think it's a good thing to stay away from China. I mean, I think what's happening in China is the same thing that's kind of happening in places like Chicago, San Francisco, and New York. I mean, I think when you're hostile to freedom, hostile to capital, and I kind of equate freedom with capital, right? So I think you have to have a free society. One component of a growing economy, a thriving economy, is freedom, right?
I would agree with that 100%, by the way.
Yeah. Reduction in corruption, low corruption, lots of freedom. The freedom to profit off your passions. I don't want to say self-interest like Adam Smith said. I prefer passions. So I think people are successful if they're allowed to profit off the passions, right? You know, whether that's opening up a music store, or teaching high school, or teaching college, whatever people's passions are, if you're free to profit from those passions, I think that helps your economy grow. And I think China's doing the opposite of all that. So I would stay away from China. I'd also stay away from NVIDIA. I read this article today on NVIDIA. It was really eye-opening. It's from Leo Sun at Motley Fool. The stock is up 600%, a factor of 7 since 2022. In 2022, 39% of its revenue came from data center chips. Now that's 87%. So you have this substantial dependence on AI marketing, which exposes investors to this unpredictable future regulations of AI, right? It controls 88% of the market, but AMD is coming after it. It's rolling out cheaper AI accelerators. The NVIDIA GPUs are being beaten by AMD's Instinct GPUs in terms of raw processing power and memory usage. And NVIDIA's are 4 times more costly. So, and here's the kicker, what I thought was really interesting. NVIDIA stock is trading 49 times forward earnings and 26 times this year's sales.
That's the part that's a real problem for me, yeah. Is the sales.
Yeah, so, I mean, those are reasonable valuations if you believe...
26 times sales is... double. 26 yeah. times sales is not reasonable.
Well, I mean, if you think that the stock will double or triple, right? But get this. NVIDIA's insiders have sold 4 times as many shares as they have bought. So the people inside NVIDIA know it's a house of cards that's going to come crumbling down.
Well, that's my... it's funny... Carl, I did the same analysis of the 2,000 stocks that were the five stocks that were, yeah. and again, I will say 100 times, but nobody wants to listen.
Competition's a humbling thing, man.
Well, it is. Unless, you know, I'll get to AMD or NVIDIA in a second, but the issue is when you have I am not smart enough to say that NVIDIA at now $3 trillion market cap, or they ducked below it a little bit. I'm not smart enough to say that these guys might carry the ball for another decade. Microsoft, they could carry the ball for another decade. They could double it. It'd be very hard for me to believe, but they could. NVIDIA, same way. Meta, they're not as pricey. Tesla, well, it's a little different because they sell cars, but then you've got your stuff like CrowdStrike. You've got for God's sake, even the accounting firm Accenture, even stuff like Lululemon, all these places, they're seemingly well run. My point is real simple: they can't all double.
Yeah, they can't.
They can't all double. They're too big to all double. They can't do that. Amazon can't be $4 trillion. I mean, there won't be anybody. I mean, they one of them could, maybe. They can't all, because the economy is just not that big. I mean, how does Microsoft double, for God's sake? They own everything already.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, that's...
Well,
that's
here's the thing. This is the thing that ties it back to China. I think if all this were playing out in China, and the video was in China, right, and AMD was in China, I think what would happen in China is that the CCP would probably protect NVIDIA, I would think, right? And I think that kind of thing happens in Japan. It's more likely to happen there than it is here in the United States. Here in the United States, foreigners can come and go. They can buy real estate. They can buy companies. They can buy, you know, whatever, right? They can. You can't really do that in other countries, right? You have to be like a citizen.
Yeah. Oh,
something.
Yeah. You got to be something. Yeah.
The capital flows in and out of the United States, but I think in a place like China or Japan, or even in Europe, the big boy, in this case NVIDIA, would be protected by maybe regulations that keep the competitors at bay, right? So I think that's the difference, and that's why, yeah, I would stay away from NVIDIA.
I'm glad you said it, not me, because I don't normally give invest, but I have some concerns about NVIDIA they're just out there. One is obviously the valuation, the time sales part. But
for people who think it's going to keep going up, people that advise people on TV that say, "Hey, ride the train all the way up," I'm saying get off. Because the gravy train ends at some point. You run out of gravy.
See, no, you're just the regular kind of guy that is a college professor. Now, you don't deal with the investment world, okay? Which is probably to your credit. Do you realize that if I were to say, if I were to recommend to a client and say, 122 in NVIDIA, which would be what, $1,200 before the split. You've ridden it a long way. You know what? You wouldn't buy it here, would you? Probably not. Maybe we should lighten up a little. Do you realize that if it trades 124 2 weeks from now, that I just cost him $1.30?
Yeah.
Because he would have been in it if I didn't say it. The idea, really, my grandfather used to say, never be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. He's been dead since 68, and that line has died with him. Now it's an absolute mortal sin to leave a little something for the next guy. If you don't sell the top, everybody's convinced that they're going to get the memo and that they're going to sell the top. I got news for you. I've been here a long time. I mean, I've bought a bottom and sold a top maybe twice in 40 years. and I did small and just by accident. type of thing. Yeah. And it is just like really hard to do. But here's my specific concerns about that company. And again, this is not investment advice. You mentioned the valuations. Okay, I'm going to say you mentioned the valuations. What I read in the last earnings is that four companies are 50% of their sales. That makes me nervous. Now, the four companies are serious companies. They're Google or Amazon people, and I don't expect them going out of business anytime soon. But it makes me nervous. All it takes is one to say I'm going to go over to AMD or something like you're talking about. There's things there. There's all kinds of. There's a couple of podcasts out there that people sent me. Anybody can say what they want in a podcast, even me. I can't because I'm registered. But these guys can. Somehow or another, there's rumors in the wind that NVIDIA is essentially financing people to be in their backlog, where they're borrowing the money from NVIDIA to buy NVIDIA chips, and they're financing the stuff. Well, if that's true, doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with it. It's not illegal. And by the way, it's nothing different than a lot of companies did. I mean, mining companies sometimes financed the mining equipment for people to drill a mine, right? I mean, it's not like it's never happened before. But it just adds a layer of let's say risk. No, so when you take the valuation, you take the few clients, and Carl, who knows more about this than clearly me, I'm gonna say probably you. He says when you're talking about stuff that gets obsolete so fast, I mean, nothing gets more obsolete faster than I use the term computer equipment, information whatever equipment. He says not only if somebody comes out with something that is faster, like you're saying, Microsoft and AMD are threatening to, or even Intel is threatening to. Now, whether they are, they aren't. Because it not only is faster, it's probably a lot cheaper to run, because if it's faster, it doesn't generate as much heat, so you don't need as much power to run it, and you don't need as much air conditioning to cool it. So you can't, if it's somebody comes out with something better, you can't even use it, much less say, well, okay, it's not as good as the new stuff, but I could, it's like, you know, okay, my truck isn't as good as a new one, but so what? It still runs fine, and I can use it for another decade. Carl says that doesn't work in that industry, because all of a sudden one is way cheaper to operate and everything else. You might have to just basically throw them in the lake, you know.
Yeah.
Now, I'm saying that the risks in that industry, look at the places we thought would never, you know, would never be untoward. I mean, Cisco. God, when we moved offices, God, it's a long time ago. It's got to be 20 years. We moved offices, we were in 175, and we had these professional trading lines, we had a bunch of people working, we had a bigger operation than we do now. We don't have as many clients as we do now, but we had a bigger, we had all kinds of stuff going. I was still trading through a joint back office. Every time we got a feed from somebody, you needed a router. I had a quote feed from First Options. I had a quote feed from the trading floor. I had all kind. When we left, we had this huge table. We must have had 20 Cisco routers. Every time you had a new feed line, we had to buy a router. We must have had 20 of them sitting on the table. Moved in a new place, we got one. Now it's way more sophisticated, probably cost more. It didn't cost 20 times more. Didn't come anywhere near 20 times more. It was probably as much as two of the other ones were. Now, Cisco obviously has come back and does a lot of other stuff, and you know, I'm not disparaging them. I'm saying, but that's what happens. We all of a sudden need any of that stuff, right? And I'm not saying NVIDIA's going to get there, but somewhere it's a reach to say 25 years from now they're still going to be the you know, the dog at the head of the pack, because it's really hard to do that after 25 years, isn't it?
Well, I mean, with the product life cycles that are out there now compared to like 20, 30, even 40 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago, the product life cycles were a lot longer.
Not in some industries. They were pretty quick. Yeah. Man, I remember... look at the computer industry. I remember Pullman having... We had 10 machines, whatever the hell the name of the things were, the 375s or something. Hell, they were $20,000 a month in 1978. And we had a building in Dallas that looked like a... You know, like I would withstand a tank assault, concrete, insulated, it had to be kept at a certain temperature. I did an AFE, whatever the hell they used to call those things, a request for something, for a new capital thing. We bought a 3033 that did the work of six of the other ones for the same price. And the other ones we ended up leasing out at $1,000 a month instead of $20,000. We had $19,000 for two more years. I mean, the life cycles were dramatic.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you make of any seasonal stuff here in the market, or are we just going to keep bumping along here? It looks like we might be just going to keep bumping. What do you think?
Well, if you look at I keep talking about this. If you look at margin debt in the S&P 500 since about 2019 or 2018, I bet the correlation is really close to one. I mean, almost exactly to one. I mean, the ups and the downs, I mean, correlation close to one. So the Fed is not being easy. Interest rates might be high. The Fed's not being easy. Housing, the not housing bubble, it looks like it's still going up to me, according to the Federal Reserve database. So I think the Fed is still, and investors buying tips versus treasuries, conventionals, they still expect inflation to be above 2%, still elevated.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I don't think the Fed's being easy. I mean, I don't think the Fed's being restrictive.
No.
It just raised the cost of capital. That's all it did, raised the cost of capital.
Yeah, I don't think they're being I don't think going from one to whatever, five, is all that restrictive.
Don't fight the Fed. Yeah. It looks like the Fed is still printing money, lending is still rising, margin debt is screaming up.
Yep.
Stay co-integrated with the S&P 500. Don't fight the Fed, right?
Buy the dip. S&P futures down 21. Have a nice fourth, buddy. Do a good job down on you. Do a good job down on you. Because you ever invite me, I want some water. Just saying.
Hopefully, I'll have it this week.
SP Futures down 21, NASDAQ Futures down 94. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.